Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, our FERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is RFERL Enterprise Editor Carl Schreck. Hi, Carl. Good to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be back.
All right. There's been a bad aviation accident in Moscow, as you probably know, where officials say 41 people aboard an Aeroflot jet were killed when the plane caught fire after an emergency landing at Sheremetyevo Airport. That was yesterday evening. The Superjet had taken off for Murmansk and was returning after problems on board, possibly from a lightning strike. Obviously, a huge tragedy. On the show today, I want to focus on a couple of things that are coming up this week, though. One is a lot of journalists in Russia have been tweeting lately about they're calling officials and being asked to call back после Praznikov, after the holidays. Last week was May Day, and Russia celebrates Victory Day this week on May 9th. I have memories from Moscow of encountering huge missiles on the way home from work in the days ahead of Victory Day. And I guess, as usual, there'll be a big military parade on Red Square with those weapons and watched by President Vladimir Putin and others. One difference, though, this year is that apparently there will be no foreign leaders watching with Putin, or at least none are expected. The Kremlin says none were formally invited. Now, it's not a huge difference from the past couple of years. Last year, only the Serbian and Israeli leaders were there. And in 2017, it was only Moldova's Igor Dodon, a big fan of Putin's. But it is quite a change from some of the rounder anniversaries in the past and from many past years in which Western leaders and those from other former Soviet republics were in attendance. For the 70th anniversary of the Nazi defeat in 2015, Chinese President Xi Jinping and the UN Secretary General were there, though Barack Obama was not. George W. Bush was there in 2005, and Western troops have sometimes taken part in the past. Obviously, the absence of Western leaders now, this year, is largely a product of the very strained relations, after Russia's interference in Ukraine and in Western elections and such. I think with other former Soviet republics, there are a few reasons. One is that people in Central Asian countries and others are starting, I think, to question the Soviet-era narrative of the war more. And also, in a way, I think it's become sort of a prominent element of Russian, patriotism under Putin, that I think in some ways that has maybe diluted the idea of a common sacrifice or a shared experience, for some people elsewhere in the former Soviet Union. Obviously, there are very bad relations with Ukraine. But I think in Central Asia, you know, there's definitely kind of a feeling of, this is your celebration that we're doing. And, you know, they've taken down, I think, some statues from the honoring World War II. Carl, so what do you think about this?
Well, the Kremlin is playing this down, saying that because it's not a round anniversary, that they're not sending out invitations to any specific foreign leaders. So I guess the big one to watch would be next year. Obviously for Western leaders, the optics of it would be bad showing up as Russia parades its military and, you know, while at the same time is, coming in the wake of the Ukraine crisis and its backing of separatists in eastern Ukraine. So obviously it's not very tenable politically for Western leaders to show up, although Vučić from Serbia came last year, and he's obviously constantly playing a balancing act between the EU and Russia, and Netanyahu was there as well. So I think next year will be the big one to watch. You know, in 2015 was a big anniversary, and almost no Western leader showed up. I think, did Zeman show up that year?
I'm not sure. Yeah, that's possible.
I know that they were. The Steven Seagal showed up in 2015, so we might want to keep an eye out for him. There. The Kremlin will go out of its way to highlight which leaders sent in their congratulations, as they typically do, primarily from the former Soviet Union.
Yeah, I know. I think that's an interesting point, a good idea to sort of look at next year, obviously around anniversary, and whether, you know, because I think that will be a sign, if there are foreign, especially Western leaders there, of whether anything has changed, whether you know, whether anything has happened, maybe in Ukraine towards smoothing things out or getting closer to an end of the conflict in Eastern Ukraine. So it will be something to watch, as you say. You know, 2015. I guess, you know, I remember Obama didn't go, and you know, there was obviously talk in Russia of, well, you're not honoring the common victory. One other thing, though, I mean, in his speeches, Putin almost every year has managed to get in kind of in his speech before the parade on Red Square. He seems to always equate. He suggests that there are forces that are, you know, eager to repeat what Hitler did, or to kind of take over the world or impose their will on the world. And a lot of times, I mean, sometimes, you know, you can take that as meaning in the past Al-Qaeda or terrorists, others. But I think a lot of the time he's also kind of hinted at the U.S. You know, so it's certainly used in terms of he used the anniversary to make statements about, you know, commonality. You know, the Allies defeated the Nazi Germany, but also to kind of score points, I think, a bit. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens next year.
I mean, regarding the speech, yeah, last year he took a swipe at the United States, a very thinly veiled one, and I would expect at least a line or two, something along those lines in this year's speech as well.
Yeah, that does seem like a good point. Now, another thing happening this week, a little sooner than May 9th, actually, is a meeting between Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Finland. Now, they're meeting on the sidelines of a gathering of Arctic nations that is being held today and tomorrow, appropriately in a city on the Arctic Circle in Finland. They'll talk about a few things, but they're expected to focus on Venezuela, where Moscow backs Nicolas Maduro and Washington backs Juan Guaido, the opposition leader who's recognized as interim president by the United States and dozens of other countries. Maybe I'm missing something, but there doesn't seem to be too much room for agreement here. You know, last week there was an attempt by Guaido to, essentially take over, and that fizzled. But I don't see Pompeo says Russia and Pompeo and Lavrov spoke by phone yesterday, I believe. Pompeo says Russia should, quote, get out of Venezuela. And Lavrov says the United States should stop trying to get rid of Maduro. So I'm not really seeing that much room for agreement. Carl, any thoughts about what might come out of this meeting?
Yeah, I as well don't see a lot of room for any sort of agreement between Moscow and Washington on this, and it's kind of unclear to me how it would resolve itself, at least, you know, at that level, on a bilateral level. The writing in the Moscow Times this week, the Russian political analyst Vladimir Frolov suggested Moscow might try to get some concessions on Ukraine from the United States. With Bolton talking about, you know, Russia shouldn't be messing around in the Western Hemisphere, Moscow can look at that and say, well, on the same token, Ukraine is our area of influence. But I don't think that's really in play from the U.S. side, any sort of concessions on Ukraine. You know, Frolov writes that Moscow is ready to sell its stake in Maduro, but still unclear whether you know, Washington is ready to offer the right price. So there may be, you know, Russia may make some attempts on that front, but I don't see that going anywhere, honestly.
That's highly interesting. I mean, there's sort of been talk, you know, for years, the idea that Russia could sort of trade Syria for Ukraine, to Syria, and now, you know, this, as you point out, is kind of a more clear cut idea where you have this is going on in the Western Hemisphere. Some U.S. officials have been talking quite clearly, including Bolton, about it. You know, this is essentially kind of our hemisphere and our backyard. And so I think certainly that would raise concerns in Ukraine that something like that could happen if Russia is seeking a you know, quid pro quo, essentially trading Venezuela for Ukraine. But I agree. I mean, I think, and we haven't seen that much change really in the U.S. position on Ukraine, I don't think, due to kind of as a result of things happening elsewhere. I think it's always kind of a concern, but I agree. It's hard to imagine, you know, the U.S. Kind of grabbing at that if that's offered by Russia. I mean, one thing that's that sort of goes into the mix is Trump's comments on Venezuela after speaking to Putin. You know, he said Putin doesn't really want. I don't know the exact. I don't have an exact quote, but you know, Putin doesn't really want to be that involved in Venezuela, and what he wants is a good solution or a positive solution for the people. And Trump said he agrees with that. So I think that's a bit of a wild card in that, you know, we have Pompeo and other officials making very unequivocal comments about Russia should get out, and then Trump making comments of a very different sort. So I think maybe, you know, and Pompeo was asked by reporters about that and said, you know, I'm not sure about I haven't heard the context of those comments. But so I think that does, you know, maybe in Russia's mind or in the Kremlin's mind, that sets up, you know, increases the chances of some agreement. And, you know, I don't know what else they'll talk about in detail. There was this mentioned by Trump of hopes for a meeting, you know, talks with Russia about a new nuclear treaty, and then eventually getting China involved. So it seems possible they could talk about that, and that's maybe something that, while it's unclear exactly what, you know, the sides would decide on in the future, you know, something that's a little bit more, you know, there's a little bit less tension surrounding it, despite the U.S. withdrawal from the INF and that sort of thing. So, you know, I think there's a possibility that we'll see some interesting statements about other issues, but Venezuela does seem to be the main one.
Yeah, Venezuela will definitely be the issue to watch here. I am, you know, in these matters often pessimistic by nature, and I don't see, I don't expect any sort of breakthroughs, though, to come out of the meeting.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens, and that's it for today. Thanks very much, Carl. Great to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm off next week, but we'll be back on May 20th for another look at the week ahead in Russia.